That's April 18, 2012, Bhaktivedanta Manor in London. And this is part 3 of Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, reading through verses 13 to 20. So, what have we talked about so far? Someone give me a general overview of the bhakti path. What's the qualification to be a jiva? How do you get delivered? Krishna. What are the 3 stages on the bhakti path as given in chapter 12? The angas of bhakti. Then, abhyas yoga. Then, raganuga bhakti. How do you get from... what is raganuga bhakti? Yes, but how is it defined here? Constantly fixed mind and intelligence on Krishna. What are the qualifications? That Krishna, Radha Krishna, dancing on your tongue when you chant, that you perceive that Krishna is directly eating the food that you offer, and you don't live on the material plane. If you can't do that, then what do you do to prepare yourself for Raganuga Bhakti? No, different path. If you're not qualified for Raganuga Bhakti, what do you do to become qualified for Raganuga Bhakti? Abhyas yoga. Abhyas literally means practice or repetition. What are you repeating? Yes, bringing the mind back to Krishna. You're repeatedly bringing the mind back to Krishna. How does Abhyas Yoga prepare you for Raganuga Bhakti? What does Abhyas Yoga give you that allows you to enter into Raganuga Bhakti? Desire. Gives you desire. Suppose you're not qualified for Abhyas Yoga. Suppose you can't control your mind. Then what do you do? The external angas of bhakti. Okay? And what does that mean? The external Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Okay, we're also doing that in Abhyas Yoga. It's not that you stop doing the externals. And what qualification does doing the Angas of Bhakti give you that allows you to enter into Abhyas Yoga? Peace. Because you can't control the mind unless you're peaceful. And how do you become peaceful? How does doing the Angas of Bhakti give you peace? What's the main thing you have to cultivate in the angas of bhakti that gives you the peace that allows you to enter into Abhyas Yoga? No, that's for the yoga letter. Although there's faith in bhakti also, obviously. Was there a certain mentality? The Krishna is the boss. Okay, Krishna's the boss. Bhaktiram Yagatapasam Sarvalok Maheshram Surudam Sarvabhutanam Gyatramam Shanti Mrityati. So that gives you shanti, that gives you peace. Without peace, you can't practice controlling your mind. It's not possible. So thinking that Krishna is the boss. Everything I'm doing for him. He's my company president. What are we selling? Prema. And whatever, so I don't worry much, Prabhupada says, about my maintenance. Because Krishna's maintaining me. Okay, that's the path of bhakti. Little side note, where does Varnashram fit into that? What's the relationship of Varnashram to the path of bhakti? It's in the indirect, part of the indirect path. But what is can you use Varnashram in bhakti? You can. It's optional. It helps to regulate your propensities. So in the external, in doing the angas of bhakti externally, and in doing the angas of bhakti both externally and internally, as Abhyas Yoga, Varnashram can be accepted as optional, in which case it becomes Gona Dharma. It becomes a subsidiary function. And if done in the proper consciousness, it also acts like bhakti, like the iron rod in the fire. What about at Raganuga Bhakti? Would you be doing anything in Varnashram? You could. Why? just to set an example. Okay? Now, there is also an indirect path. Now, this indirect path, does that lead to the Angas of Bhakti, Abhyas Yoga, or Raghunuga Bhakti? Where can it lead to? Abhyas Yoga. Can you go directly from the indirect path to Raghunuga Bhakti? No. Okay, what's the indirect path? Starts with? Okay, actually Varnashram isn't even part of the indirect path. Varnashram gives you the qualifications to begin the indirect path. So Varnashram, you're not on the indirect path yet. That's just qualifying you. And it qualifies you by giving you, what does it give you? Piety. Okay? Then where can you start the indirect path? Two places you can start it. Karma Yoga or Gyan Yoga. You can start it either at Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga. What is Karma Yoga? It's Varnashram Dharma, but done for Krishna would be very nice. Then if it's done really for Krishna, then it's Gona Dharma, a subsidiary function of bhakti. On the indirect path, Varnashram is done for self-realization, for realizing either the self, Brahman, or both. So, of course, Brahman is also Krishna, so you could say it's being done for Krishna, but not really. Okay, and what is Gyan Yoga? What are you doing in Gyan Yoga? So in Karma Yoga, you're acting in Varnashram like everybody else, but your motive is different. And in Gyan Yoga, what are you doing? You're studying. Are you necessarily doing all the duties of Varnashram? No, probably not. And what kind of people are going to be doing Gyan Yoga? Mostly. Mostly renunciates or very renounced householders. And you're not so active in the world, you're studying Shastra. Particularly you're studying the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra. Okay, by the way, if you started Karma Yoga and go to Gyan Yoga, what does Karma Yoga give you that allows you to get to Gyan Yoga? Peace, by giving up the fruits, by giving up a desire to enjoy the fruits, karma palatyaga, you get shanti, you get peace. You can't sit and study shastra all day if you're not peaceful. It just won't be possible. You want to jump up and do things. Okay, what's the last step on the yoga ladder? Dhyan yoga. What are you doing in dhyan yoga? You're entering into samadhi. You're meditating on the paramatma. Now you can go from dhyan yoga to dhyan yoga, or you can go from Karma Yoga directly to Dhyan Yoga. And again, the qualification is peace. Now, how do you get from Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, or Dhyan Yoga to the Abhyas Yoga of Bhakti? You have to get the mercy of a devotee, which gives you instructions and faith. You have to get some faith. Okay, everybody remember that now from the last 2 days? All right. So the last part of the chapter is both inspiring and humbling, and it's about the qualities of those who have attained peace. So peace is, again, the bridge from where to where? Karma Yoga to Gyan or Dhyan. It's also the bridge from Gyan Yoga to Dhyan, and it's the bridge from the Angas of Bhakti to Abhyas Yoga. Now here Krishna is going to be really focusing on the peace attained by the Bhakti Yogi. Not as much the peace attained by the Karma Yogi or the Gyan Yogi. So these are going to be the qualities of the Bhakta who has attained peace. So these are peace either by performing the external limbs of bhakti with what consciousness? With what consciousness? How do you attain peace in bhakti? You can't fix the mind yet at that point, no. That Krishna is the boss. He's the proprietor. Everything I'm doing, I'm working for him. Or the peace attained through the indirect path. So this enables you, this peace produces certain qualities. You know, if we just talk about peace, peace. But here Krishna's becoming very specific. He's analyzing, you know, analyzing. You take something and you break it up into its smaller parts. Like, if you're going to talk about what's humility, what's forgiveness, those are just sort of big, vague words, right? Or what's love? Like Rupa Goswami breaks up love into all these different parts and subparts, and how do they relate to each other? So here Krishna is going to take the big quality of peace. He's already said, by giving up the fruits of your activities, you attain peace. Now he's going to explain, what does that look like? What does that feel like? What will you be doing? What exactly would you be thinking? What exactly would you be feeling? What exactly would you be doing? And Prabhupada says that these qualifications enable a person to fix their mind. So they give you these qualifications of peace. They enable you to perform Abhyas Yoga. They enable you to keep pulling your mind back to Krishna and eventually come to Raghunuga Bhakti, where you can fix your mind on Krishna. Okay, so this is the bridge again to Abhyas Yoga, Shanti. Okay, now, what does peace have to do with all these wonderful qualities? Why are these wonderful qualities the result of peace? So we've talked about this many times, how in the Bhagavatam it says the non-devotees have no good qualities. And sometimes we hear that and we say, well, that doesn't justify with my experience. I experience that people who are atheists have good qualities. And sometimes I experience, perish the thought, that some people in bhakti yoga don't always have good qualities. Sometimes it's very amazing. You know, we think if I join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that every single member is going to be a saint. Of course, I don't consider whether or not I'm a saint. I assume that I'm a saint, and then I am very surprised that everybody else isn't. Of course, they're wondering why I'm not. But anyway, they're having the same questions about me. And we see that people outside, even atheists, they can have moral principles, they can follow ethics, they can have so many good qualities. So what exactly does this mean? Of course, there's a number of places where Prabhupada says that non-devotees can have good qualities. And in fact, Krishna has a whole part of the universe for atheists who have good qualities. It's called the subterranean heavenly planets. So what are they for? They're for atheists who are following Varnashram Dharma and have good qualities. Who goes there? See, Krishna is very kind. He's not like the modern Christian idea of God that if you don't surrender to him in love, then you have to suffer. Even if you're, and Rupa Goswami describes this as dependable, Krishna's quality of dependable, that the demons know that if they follow the rules, Krishna's not going to punish them. In fact, he's going to reward them. Which is why sometimes the demons even get in charge of things, like Hiranyakashipu, and then Krishna has to find some trick to get him out. Anyway, so why do the demons not have any good qualities ultimately, or any atheist, or anybody who's below the point of peace? Because peace is the opposite of fear. And if we have any fear, then as soon as we feel that fear, we jettison our good qualities. Jettisoning your good qualities when you feel fear is called cowardice. So what does it mean to be a coward? It means I'm in a situation where I become so overwhelmed by fear that I do something selfish or immoral. Isn't that what it means to be a coward? There's a situation that calls for me to do something that's risky to myself for a greater good. And out of fear, I choose the lower path. Out of fear for myself and my own protection, I don't help others or I don't exhibit moral principles. Now, it's interesting that even demons denigrate cowardice. Even the demons don't like cowardice. But the essential principle of conditioned life is to be a coward. Because conditioned life, you're overwhelmed by fear. Now, to whatever extent, these things are not black and white. It's not that either you're a total demon or you're a pure devotee. It's just not like that. So to whatever extent one is feeling peace, to that extent, one will act properly, even if there's danger to myself. But if I don't have complete faith in Krishna, if I don't have complete trust in Krishna, then I don't have complete faith and complete peace. And whatever point my peace runs out, at that point I'll act like a coward. If we think of it just in terms of ordinary honesty, is anybody here prepared to say, I'm a totally honest person? Anybody ready to say, I'm a 100% honest person? Embarrassing, isn't it? So at what point do we become dishonest? I'm sure we're all basically honest people. Hopefully. At what point do we become dishonest? When we become a coward. When we're thinking, if I'm honest in this situation, I may suffer. Therefore, if one has full peace, one has full good qualities. If one has full peace, one has full good qualities. Otherwise, we don't really have good qualities. We're really self-serving. And if being good and being proper and being moral will serve ourselves, we do it. And if it doesn't, we won't. And as one progresses in Krishna consciousness, that point at which out of fear we give up our good qualities gets higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And a person will start acting properly even in more and more and more scary situations. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur introduces this section by saying, what's the description of the devotee who has attained such peace? And now there's 8 verses to describe that devotee. Now, Prabhupada often talks about how these good qualities come automatically by bhakti. Now, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that the devotee doesn't make any effort at all to develop these qualities? If we compare it to being a vegetarian, Prabhupada also often says that being a vegetarian is automatic when you're a devotee. You don't have to join a vegetarian society to become a vegetarian. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with devotees joining a vegetarian society. But the point is, you don't have to become a vegetarian by joining a vegetarian society. It's a natural part of bhakti. But still, you have to make some effort to be a vegetarian, even in bhakti. You have to read labels. You guys call it the hypermarket. So in America, if you said you're going to the hypermarket, that would mean that you're going like this in the market. So we have supermarkets instead of hypermarkets. But anyway, if you can't just go to the hypermarket and close your eyes and chant Hare Krishna and just randomly pull things off the shelf into your cart, because I'm a devotee, therefore whatever I eat will automatically be vegetarian. No, it's not like that. We make an effort to be a vegetarian, but it's part of our bhakti. It's not separate from our bhakti. So in a similar way, we make an effort. And one person was asking the other day about that, until one is at a very high platform, doing these things feels somewhat artificial and mechanical. So yes, you make a mechanical effort. You make a deliberate effort. That's what practice bhakti is about. You're practicing to have these good qualities. So what I've done is, instead of going verse by verse through the rest of the chapter, I've divided up the qualities as far as possible into categories. So the first category I found, and I'm sure that somebody could do a much better job than I did of dividing this into categories. So if you don't agree with how I've categorized it, you can please make a suggestion at the end of the class, and then the next time I present it, hopefully we'll do a better job. So this first category is being determined and undistracted. Determined and undistracted. That Krishna is the supreme goal of life. That I don't give up serving Krishna even, you know, if I have some problem, if some devotee yells at me, or I have a stomach ache, or I don't have any money, or whatever. That I'm controlling myself. I don't have to be controlled just by some rule in the temple, or by some sort of threat or punishment. Very expert, lovely quality, expert. Prabhupada says the devotee should know something of everything and everything of something. So I really love it when Srila Prabhupada talks about this quality in Bombay in 76 in relationship to education and Gurukula. So some devotees have the rather interesting idea that we should educate our children to be materially fools. I remember even there was the father of one of my students who said, don't give my child an education so he can go to university if he wants to. Don't give him any choice other than to live in the ashram. So Prabhupada says in the second canto that Gurukula is for teaching the values of life plus specific training for a livelihood. And it's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada was speaking about this principle of being expert both in relationship to the training of children and in relationship to the adults who are in the Brahmachari ashram in Bombay. Which tells me that in our temples, we should be training our Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis to become expert, to know something of everything and everything of something. And then, of course, to be pure. One cannot fix one's mind, Prabhupada says in the first canto. Cannot hear the Bhagavatam with rapt attention unless one's pure in body. One cannot be pure in body unless he's free in eating, sleeping, fearing, and defending. One cannot be pure in that unless one is pure in mind. Then not looking for a material result. Not being attached to the result. This is the same principle as karma palatyaga. I'm not working for my own happiness, and my happiness is not dependent on the result. Sometimes, even in Krishna consciousness, we're thinking, well, Krishna's grace, Krishna's happiness is dependent on the number of books that I sold, or whether or not I collect the money to fix the pujari room, or some kind of external result. That's still a fruit of mentality. One should understand, I'm not the doer. I can't control the result. I just do my duty, and I'm offering my duty now, and now, and now, and now to Krishna. The result I'm looking for is that Krishna is pleased with me now, and Krishna is pleased with me now, and Krishna is pleased with me now. Without any cares. I have a great boss. I don't have to worry that my boss will not pay my salary. One time my husband had a job, and he only worked at it for a couple weeks, because at the end of that time, this boss didn't pay him. You know, so one may worry if one has a job. Maybe my boss will pay me, maybe they won't pay me. Maybe they'll give me what they promised, maybe they won't. Because we've all had experience of somebody saying, oh, yes, yes, I will give you this, I will give you this, I will give you that. And they don't. Whether it's a job one works, whether it's in family life, whether it's among one's friends. But Krishna's not like that. He's dependable. So we have no cares. Krishna will take care of me. And you could say, but Urmila, we know of devotees who don't get taken care of. We know of devotees who are poor. We know of devotees who get cancer. We know of devotees that their husband leaves them there with five little children to take care of and so many things. But there's also a trust that however Krishna takes care of me is perfect. When the mother takes the toy away from the child may think, I don't like my mother anymore. But the mother is taking the toy away out of care for the child. To help the child, maybe because it's dinner time. Maybe because the child was hitting their brother over the head with the toy. So whether Krishna gives, whether Krishna takes away. I mean, even in the Bible it says, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the holy name of the Lord. So we have no cares. Prabhupada says Krishna gives with 10 hands and then you can't even accept it all. And he takes away with 10 hands and then you can't hold on to it. Whether he's giving or whether he's taking, it's actually both caring. And it's both Krishna's way of giving us everything we need. Sometimes we don't know the best way to get what we need. Sometimes we're thinking the way I'm going to get what I need is right there, but maybe the way we're going to get what we need is over there. Sometimes we're so convinced if I do A, B, C, I'm going to get what I need. And we do A, B, C and we don't get what we need. Doesn't that happen? Do we really know the best way to get what we need? Do we even know what we need? Half the time we don't even know what we need. Well, many times we don't know what we need and we don't know how to get there, but we're so convinced, I know everything and I'm the controller and I'm omniscient and I know what's best for me. And if something else is happening, that means Krishna doesn't love me anymore. Or he's not taking care of me. Or that cares, that's only for very advanced devotees, Prabhu. It's not for people like me. But no, as soon as we surrender to Krishna, then immediately we're under his personal protection. Yogakshema vaham yaham. Nir yogakshema atmavan. Nir yogakshema atmavan. 245. Don't worry. Yoga is what you don't have, what you need to connect with. Kshema is protecting what you have. Don't worry about what you don't have. Don't worry about protecting what you have. Atmavan, be fixed in self. Why? Because yoga kshema vaham yaham. I'm going to take care of that. You know, even materially, if you have a good boss, you don't need to worry about your salary. If you work for a really good company, you don't have to think twice. Am I going to get a salary? Am I going to get a desk? Am I going to get the equipment I need? You just concentrate on your work, and you know that your good boss is going to take care of it. I know when my husband ran a business, he always told me, make sure you pay people before they ask. Never make people ask for money. Let people have no anxiety. Am I going to be taken care of? Of course, as a jiva, we may not be able. We are not able to fully take care of others, but Krishna can. So no cares. No cares. And with peace, I can fix my mind on Krishna and Krishna's business. All right, that's how our basic determination. Now what? That's how the qualities of peace are exemplified in our determination. Now how are the qualities of peace shown when we deal with other people? So I don't hate people even if they hate me. Now at least I have people who hate me. Sometimes I haven't any clue why they hate me. Sometimes I do know why they hate me. Sometimes I can trace it to something I did or something I said. But sometimes I don't have any idea. As this one lady who hates me, I don't know why she hates me. I can't figure it out. Anytime I say anything, at least I don't have to deal with her in the same location very often. But, you know, this one conference that we're both members of on email, and I'm terrified of ever contributing anything to it, because as soon as I contribute anything to it, she starts criticizing me to everybody. I'm like, what did I do? So there are people who hate us. And that's, you know, my dear friends, that's normal. It's not that we're ever going to get to a point where everybody likes us. Please don't waste your time trying to make everybody like you, because there are even jivas who hate Krishna. And he doesn't have any faults. You know, Jesus was crucified. There was a murder attempt against Bhaktisiddhanta. Prahlad's own father tried to kill him. You know, it's just what it is. Krishna has demons who look at him and say, oh, he's so beautiful, like Kaliyavana, let me kill him. So even if we're wonderful, and even if we're perfect, and even if we read all the self-help books, and we would follow every single thing they said all the time, and we were perfect at empathic listening and all those things, there would still be people who hate us. For whatever reason. So one should wish them well. One should wish them well. This is actually the essence of forgiveness. May everyone be happy. If someone needs to learn a lesson, may they learn it through joy. And as Saruchi told Dhruva Maharaj, whatever you wish for people, that is what you will experience. So if I wish my enemies to suffer in order to become rectified, then I will suffer in order to become rectified. If we are tired of learning lessons through suffering, then we should wish only joy for others. Now that's easy for the people who like us, but to wish only joy even for those who hate us, even for those who try to harm us in some way. Let this person be filled with joy. Let this person learn whatever they need to learn in a joyful way. Prabhupada said, this person's acting as my enemy for some cause. Sometimes I can see the cause in this life. I insulted them at one point, or I didn't treat them nicely, or something. But sometimes, like this one lady, I have no idea what I did in this life. I can't figure it out. I did something, some point, to somebody, somewhere, that Krishna is allowing this person to act as my enemy. So the devotee sees, ultimately, I am responsible. So better to tolerate it, not always to go to Krishna, you know, please kill my enemies, please kill my enemies. Or like the demon in the 16th chapter, I've so far killed those enemies and those other ones, I'll get them too. And here you see that the tigers and the deer, who are natural enemies, they're dancing together in kirtan. So what's nice about the Hare Krishna movement is if we have enemies in the movement, we'll still dance with them in the kirtan, isn't it? I forget which devotee it was. They made the point that we'll always try to help somebody remember Krishna at the time of death, even if they're our enemy. So even if there's some other devotee who absolutely hates you and has caused you nothing but grief and has told lies about you and gotten you in trouble with your authorities and put nasty things about you on the internet, if they were dying right in front of you, I bet you'd go chant Hare Krishna to them. Isn't it? I mean, would you walk past them and say, oh, I'm not going to help you go back to Godhead? I don't think so. As one very nice story, when the devotees were preaching behind the Iron Curtain in the days of the Soviet Union, and they had to be there in disguise. There was a sannyasi there, and he had to let his hair grow a little bit, and they were wearing, you know, I never know what to call them. I don't like to call them non-devotional clothes, because my clothes have never been devotional as far as I know, you know, Hare Krishna, so I don't know what to call them. Western clothes, but that sounds like, you know, the Western cowboys or something, so I don't know. Modern European style clothing. So they were wearing modern Western European style clothing. And they weren't obviously devotees, in other words. And there was a traffic jam. And the devotees asked their driver, what's the problem? They went to investigate. They saw there had been an accident. And the accident had involved one of the big commanders in the Soviet army. Someone who was the second in command in that region. And he was lying on the ground, basically dying. So the devotees came there, and one of them could speak in Russian. So what's the matter? And they told him, and he said, well, we have a phone. We can, you know, we have some sort of a way of communication. We can call an ambulance. So one of the devotees went to call an ambulance. And the attaché to the general told the general, these people are going to help you. You know, they're getting some medical help for you. And the general said, oh, thank you. You know, he could hardly talk. He was dying. And he looked at the sannyasi who was in disguise, and he said, what is your name? Now, this wasn't, the sannyasi had a different name, but he said, my name is Krishna. So this general, as he's dying, he said, oh, Krishna, Krishna, and he died. So even though the devotees were so much harassed by the Soviet officials, I mean, harassed isn't even the word for it. Chai shishi radhagokulananda sitaram lakshman hanuman gaurani tai. So the Soviet officials, they were imprisoning the devotees, they were beating them, they were torturing them, they were starving them, they were confiscating their books. But even so, when it came to help him at the time of death, the devotees didn't hesitate. They didn't say, well, this is some demon, let me not help him. Devotees are always kind, even to their so-called enemies, and whatever happens, whatever harm their enemies do to them, they understand ultimately this is Krishna. So that's how one deals with one's enemies. Now, how does one deal with one's families? One doesn't think, this is my family. You like this picture? So yeah, I know this is the family that I know very well. So one does not think, you know, this is my family. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, my friends, my wife, my sons and daughters are now your servants and maidservants. Whatever care I take of them is only as they are related to you. So one sees that these family members are not mine to enjoy. I'm not the boss of the family, and my husband is not my boss. Krishna is my boss. My family members in Krishna's company, they're either my suppliers of love of God, my co-workers in selling love of God, or my customers to whom I should sell love of God. And they're related to me in Krishna's company as Krishna's boss. They're not here for me to enjoy. They're here for Krishna to enjoy. Krishna's meeting all my needs. My wife is not going to meet all my needs. My husband's not going to meet my needs. My children are not going to meet all my needs. They are persons I am working with and serving to please Krishna. Oh, this is a hard one. He by whom no one is put into difficulty. Wow. Whenever I read this one, I feel at least a little bit of humility at how far I am from being dear to Krishna. Because Krishna says about each of these qualities, the person who has these qualities, oh, I never read from the Bhagavad, you know, read them at the end. Person who has these qualities is dear to me. So no one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. So that's very, isn't that difficult? Am I the only one who finds this difficult? Do you find this difficult? You know, especially if you're trying to get something done. If you're trying to manage something, get something done, or if you're guiding somebody. It's very difficult to only tell people what's pleasant for them to hear. People come and, you know, what's your advice? And if you can't just always say, oh, everything's fine. You're wonderful. There's no problem. You can't. I mean, then you're not really serving them and you can't always get a project done. Sometimes you have to say to people, hey, you know, I didn't see you for the last 3 days. What's going on here? How are we going to get this done? So how to do this? I see it's again a question of mood and consciousness that I'm a servant. To be very, very careful how we do things, how we say things. That to never step on people as a means to getting some project done. And to try to help people in as kind a way as possible. To never justify our putting others into anxiety. I mean, sometimes people may be put into anxiety by what we do, but to avoid it as far as possible while still doing our job. Something to be very conscious of. And who is not disturbed by anyone. So why are we disturbed by others? Why do we find the behavior of others disturbing? Because we think that they're our boss. It's the only reason I find the behavior of others disturbing. I become afraid. I think that some other jiva has some sort of power over me. But that's not the fact. I'm an eternal soul. Nobody can hurt me. I can't be damaged by any weapon. I can't be hurt by any circumstances. Nothing, ever. And Krishna's taking care of me. If Krishna allows someone to so-called hurt me, then that's Krishna dealing with me as his kindness. Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke. If Krishna wants to save me, no one can hurt me. And if Krishna wants me to be apparently hurt, nobody can save me. If Krishna determines that I need surgery in order to deal with something, then you know what? I'm going to get it. And if Krishna determines that I don't need surgery, then I'm not going to get it. So other people's cutting me, you know, generally figuratively, not literally. If it happens, it's by the grace of the Lord and it's actually loving. And if people try and it's not what Krishna wants, they won't be able to do anything. And ultimately, I can't be hurt. And then one can have peace. Avoid joining factions. Prabhupada sometimes talks about this in relationship to himself, that with the Gaudiya Math, he never joined any of the factions and therefore he was carefree. So there may be so many factions. Don't join this party or that party. All right, that's about dealing with other people. Now the qualities of peace in terms of detachment. Doesn't think he's the proprietor. Doesn't think, oh, this is my house. These are my clothes. This is my car. These are my talents. These are my abilities. This is my knowledge. Now, Krishna is the proprietor. He's giving me things to use in his service. I'm a servant. I'm not really doing anything. I'm just Krishna's instrument. And everything Krishna does is good. You see how this all relates to Bhoktaram Yagatapa Samsarva Loka Maheshram Suridam Sarvabhutanam? Do you see how all of these different qualities relate to that? Suridam sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the friend. Whatever he does is good. If Krishna feeds me, if he doesn't feed me, if sometimes Krishna gives me, you know, milk sweets from the manor, or sometimes he gave me, like he did a few months ago, some devotees gave my grandson and I some prasadam to take with us on our journey, and it was only something you would eat if you were really, really, really hungry. So sometimes you get that. You know, sometimes you get something that's just barely on the other side of food. And sometimes you eat like a king and a queen. Sometimes you may have no money. Sometimes you open up your wallet and you've got, 3 cents. When Prabhupada left his householder life for about 4 or 5 years, he had no home and no money. He was counting not his rupees, he was counting his paisa to take a train to go see a donor about giving money to print his books, and he had no money for the return journey. So sometimes Krishna gives nothing, and then later Krishna gave Prabhupada millions. Right, look at this beautiful place George Harrison donated. So whatever, if Krishna gives me nothing, or if Krishna gives me mansions, wherever I'm living, sometimes one may live very simple, just a part of a room with one little shelf and a bathroom where the hot water doesn't work. So I'm staying at Soho, and periodically there's just no hot water. And the cold water there is really cold. It's like Gangotri water. you're just waiting for it to freeze as it comes out of the shower. And other times you may stay in a very nice place, right, with a marble bathroom. So there's one place we stay with a marble bathroom, and the shower is up a flight of stairs, and there's a curtain. And I was told that some visiting sannyasis figured it was the altar and offered their dandavats in front of it. And there's gold, is really, I'm not making this up, there's gold-plated shower handles, etc. So sometimes one stays in a place like that. But whatever comes, it's Krishna. Or Krishna doesn't feed me at all today, that's Krishna. And everything he does is good, therefore always satisfied. So the little mantra I came up with is, it's all going to be okay, and even if it's not okay, it'll still be okay. But I had a friend who taught me a better one. She said, in the end, everything will be okay, so if it's not okay, it's not the end. And just to, some little thing like that, that when the mind goes, what am I going to do? I have no money, I have no food, I have no place to stay. And Krishna will take care of me, it'll all be okay. And then above duality, unaffected by happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, auspicious, inauspicious, joy and grief, desire, lamentation, honor, dishonor, fame, infamy, heat, cold, bodily pain, bodily pleasure. What does it mean, unaffected by? Does it mean if you're cold, you don't put on a jacket? I mean, if you're at a very high level like Jed Barrett, it could mean that. But it means you're going to go on serving Krishna. You're going to go on worshiping Krishna. You're going to go on with the Angas of Bhakti. You're going to go on thinking of Krishna. As Krishna explains in 14:22, one who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear. And Prabhupada says, lovely thing in that purport, that as long as we have the material body, as long as we have the material body and mind will be affected by the modes of nature. Sometimes my body's full of energy. Sometimes my body's exhausted. Sometimes my mind's full of energy. Sometimes my mind's exhausted. Sometimes my mind is happy. Sometimes my mind is sad. Sometimes it's hot. Sometimes I'm cold. Sometimes everything in my life seems auspicious. Sometimes everything seems inauspicious. But it's just the working of the modes of material nature. It's not me. They will come and go. And just observe. Oh, right now my mind's being affected by the mode of ignorance. That's interesting. Let me still worship Krishna. It will pass. Right now my mind's being affected by the mode of goodness. Oh, that's interesting. Let me just worship Krishna. It will pass. To remain neutral. It's not me. It's just the mind. It has nothing to do with me. And this can be achieved by practice. To be equipoised. If we get some dear thing, we don't, oh, now I've gotten this. We can say, thank you, Krishna, for giving me something that's dear to me. And if we get something disagreeable, thank you, Krishna, for helping me learn detachment. In either way, thank you, Krishna, for helping me, whether by giving me something that I really wanted. You sometimes get something you really wanted. Sometimes there's things I want for years and I can't find them, and all of a sudden I get them. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Krishna. And sometimes you get things that are just awful. But either way, who's giving them is Krishna. Prabhupada says everyone can appreciate when you get something nice that it's Krishna, but to appreciate in both ways. If you build up some project in Krishna consciousness and then it gets destroyed, you don't lament. It's Krishna's. Just like when Mahaprabhu asked his mother, you know this story, for a garland. Do you all know this story? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked his mother, I want a garland to worship the Ganga. And she said, as mothers regularly say to their children, I'm busy right now. I'll get it for you in a moment. And Mahaprabhu said, no, I want it now. She said, I'll get it for you in a moment. I want it now! And he broke the whole house. I mean, he actually broke the house. He broke the walls. He broke all the storage containers for the grains and the ghee. He destroyed the whole house. And then he was tired. He went to sleep. And when he got up, Satyamata said, my house belongs to you. If it gives you pleasure to destroy it, that's fine. But I don't know how I'm going to cook for you. I have a little problem. It's time for your meal. I have no stove. I have no ingredients. I have no pots. You've destroyed everything. How will I cook for you? And Lord Chaitanya said, I'll be right back. And he went out. He came back and he gave her a whole bunch of gold. And he said, now you can buy everything again. And she was asking all the neighbors, do you know where Nimai got this gold? So whatever we do for Krishna, that's for Krishna. It wasn't for me to enjoy. Krishna can build up our projects and he can destroy our projects. He can give us things. He can take those things away. And to have a higher taste, not to be attached to pious or sinful activities. Not to be thinking, well, I have to do pious activities so I can go to heaven and enjoy. to actually just be attached to serving Krishna. So these are, Krishna calls all these qualities dharma-amritam in 1220, which Baladev says, the nectarian path endowed with good qualities. And Vishwanath said, the nectar of these qualities. So when we are filled with these qualities of peace, our whole life is brilliant and sweet like nectar. And anyone who has these qualities, Krishna says over and over and over again, is very dear to him. So for each of these qualities, and we'll read the verses in a moment, Krishna will say, this devotee is very dear to me. This devotee is very dear to me. So Vishwanath says that why do these qualities make the devotee dear? Because they're coming from bhakti. Please understand the difference. Good qualities that are not coming from bhakti, they're only exhibited for selfish purposes, and therefore they're not deep, they're not real, and they can't be actually pleasing. Qualities that arise from bhakti mean they arise from trust and faith and courage in Krishna. They arise from a genuine lack of fear. They're not a device. Therefore, one who has these qualities from bhakti, Krishna is very pleased. And Krishna becomes controlled by that devotee. So even though Krishna is the boss, he becomes controlled by the love of his devotees. So now we'll read through these verses, and then if we have time, then people can ask questions. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. Hopefully you'll hear the ones as we went through them. Who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by others, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. So we ended today at 8:33.